Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good afternoon and welcome to Cure Talks. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor of Cure Talks, joining you from India. And today we are talking about multiple myeloma. This is Cure Talks' 111th episode. On the panel are myeloma survivors and advocates Cynthia Shmilevsky and Jack Aiello. The talk is being co-hosted by myeloma survivor and advocate and editor of MyelomaSurvival.com, Gary Peterson. This is our second talk in the series on high-risk smoldering myeloma. In our previous episode, we had Dr. Sharji Kumar from Mayo Clinic discuss the nuances of the upcoming ASCENT clinical trial. For this second talk today, we have Professor Jesus San Miguel from University of Navarra, Spain. He will be discussing his team's investigations into high-risk smoldering myeloma and probable cure. For patients with smoldering multiple myeloma, the standard of care is observation until symptoms develop. However, this approach does not identify high-risk patients who may benefit from early interventions. Our myeloma panel is talking to Professor Jesus San Miguel about his research, clinical trials in the pipeline, and future of myeloma treatment. Before I hand over to Gary, I would like to remind the listeners that we will be addressing questions sent in towards the end of the show. If you have a live question for Doctor, please press 1 on your keypad and let us know, and we will bring you live on air to ask your question. With that, it's over to Gary.
Yes, and I am so happy to be able to introduce Dr. San Miguel. He's the head of the hematology unit at the Universidad de Navarra and the scientific director of CIMA and the vice dean of research at the University of Navarra. I had a whole long introduction. I'm going to give it the Cliff Notes version and just say that Dr. San Miguel happens to be among an elite class of myeloma specialists throughout the world, with people like Dr. Richardson, Dr. Barlogi, Dr. Palumbo, and the like, who are just at the very tip of the spear and are exceptional myeloma specialists, and we just thank God that they're there helping us get through this very, very difficult disease. Now, Dr. San Miguel, in recent years, like immunotherapy, early treatment has taken center stage. Can you give us the logic for early treatment, and specifically in high-risk progression smoldering myeloma?
Okay, thank you very much. It is my pleasure to be with you. As you mentioned, yes, I have a long story working on multiple myeloma. I did my PhD thesis in 1980, and since then I have been working in this disease. And I can say the first message is going to be a positive message, because the outcome of myeloma patient has changed dramatically from the 90s until today. And now there are a clear hope for myeloma patient, with a good proportion of patients that probably can be cured, or at least to convert this disease into a chronic disease. Regarding your question about high-risk multiple myeloma and high-risk progression, this story also started many years ago. We reported in 2007, it's almost 10 years ago, that within the smoldering patients, there are different categories. There are low risk, there are intermediate risk, and there are high risk smoldering patients. And these high risk smoldering patients can be identified with different methods. One is the Mayo classification, that are those patients that have more than 30 grams per liter, as well as more than 10% plasma cells, when they say 30 grams per liter of M component of paraprotein, and more than 10% plasma cell in the bone marrow. The other classification is the Spanish classification, the PETIMA classification, that identify this high-risk patient by using multiparametric flow cytometry And when the majority of this plasma cell, this, whatever the proportion it is, but when all these plasma cells are clonal, they are high risk to be transformed. And when I talk about high risk, this means that these patients, half of these patients, 50%, will transform within the first 2 years. This is what we consider now high-risk smoldering patients.
Okay, and...
If you ask me for the rationale for treatment in this patient, I think this is obvious. In the past, we did not treat early myeloma or high-risk smoldering patients, mainly because most of the treatment were ineffective. By contrast, and also because at that time we were not able to discriminate between the low risk or intermediate risk that are unlikely to benefit from early intervention from the high risk multiple myeloma or the ultra high risk multiple myeloma, smoldering multiple myeloma patients that are the ones that may benefit from early intervention. And in fact, in these patients, if you have 50 or 80% risk of progression into transformation into multiple myeloma within 2 years, probably most of the patients will not like just to wait until they develop symptoms. They will prefer to avoid the symptoms and to be treated early on. I always try to compare the situation with breast cancer or prostate cancer. As soon as you detect the disease, you like to avoid, you want to avoid the transformation into an aggressive or metastatic breast cancer. Something similar start to be visualized for the high-risk smoldering, and for this reason we decided to conduct clinical trials in this population, not in the rest of the of the smoldering patients. We are concentrated only in the high-risk or ultra-high-risk patients.
Great. Well, thank you, Doctor. And Dr. Gorbriel of Dana-Farber has also been working on this, and she once stated that early treatment must show an overall survival benefit in the clinical trial setting before any benefit for early treatment can be exhibited, meaning that there was previously many trials, several trials, that were unsuccessful show any benefit in survival, including an IMiD, which was thalidomide. Yet your lenalidomide dexamethasone trial was the first to show this survival benefit. And can you explain these results?
Okay. The explanation, I think, is quite simple. And it's because in the previous trials, they didn't identify the high-risk smoldering. And they included all smoldering patients. By contrast, in our lenalidomide dexamethasone, the GIREDEX trial, we focus only on the high-risk because we consider that the high-risk are more similar, the biology of this disease is more similar to active myeloma. By contrast, in the low risk are more similar to the MGAS and are patients that probably do not need treatment. By the selection of the appropriate population, we were able to show that in these patients, in these high-risk patients, in the control arm, the no treatment arm, the time to progression was 21 months. 85% of these patients have already progressed. By contrast, in the lenalidomide, dexamethasone, only 25% of the patients have progressed, and the time to progression has not been yet achieved. But what is more important was the analysis of the overall survival. In the no-treatment arm, at 7 years, only 64% of the patients are still alive. By contrast, in the interventional arm, at 7 years, 95% of the patients continue to be alive, which this demonstrates that early intervention not only influences a delay in the progression, but also a significant benefit in overall survival.
That's remarkable. That's outstanding. Can you please tell us what the future plans are in process or in the planning stage, which we can expect for early identification and treatment of smoldering myeloma?
Okay. We continue to work in both settings. A better and more precise identification of the high-risk population. Our goal is, yes, to identify the patients that have high risk of progression into active myeloma, and we define high risk by a rate of 50% of progression within 2 years, or even better, 70 or 82% risk of progression within the first 2 years. And for these patients currently, we have designed a new clinical trial called the CESAR trial, in which the goal is to evaluate the proportion of patients that can be in sustained immunophenotypic response at 5 years. And we consider that to be in sustained immunophenotypic response at 5 years probably means to be cured. And this CESAR trial is based on induction with KRD, carfilzomib-lenalidomide dex, then autologous transplant, consolidation again with another 2 cycles of KRD, and maintenance with Lendex for 2 years. And our expectation or prediction is that half of the patients should achieve this objective, this goal.
And this is ultra high risk, huh?
No. This is for high risk and ultra high risk.
Okay, both.
Include both.
Fantastic.
High risk and ultra high risk.
This
trial has already started, and we have recruited over 30 patients already. And a very similar trial has been recently activated in the United States. It's called the ASCENT trial, that includes carfilzomib-lenalidomide plus daratumumab, with the possibility of continuing with this treatment or to receive consolidation with autologous transplant, but the design is very similar.
Well, we're all really excited about the possibility for early intervention and eliminating this crab issue, which is something that affected me, took my kidneys away for a long time, and affects a lot of other people as well. If you look just at high-risk genetic features, and not high risk of high risk of progression, it's a little confusing to me because the high risk means different in smoldering than it does in active myeloma. But if you have high-risk features, meaning the FISH features or genetic profiling, if you have those features, did the LD study show early treatment had any impact on patients with the high-risk cytogenetics?
Okay. Unfortunately, when we performed the Kilredex trial, the Lendex, at that time we have genetic information only in a small fraction of the patients, and also you should consider that the proportion of patients with genetic abnormalities in smoldering is relatively small, which is good. And you don't want, in these patients that have this genetic abnormality, the median time to progression was approximately 2 years. Again, this is the reason why this high-risk group is also a potential subgroup for treatment intervention, at least within a clinical trials. We are not treating smoldering patients, high-risk smoldering, outside of a clinical trial. All our intervention is within well-designed clinical trials. Then in the new, in the CESAR trial, the one that is using carfilzomib-lenalidomide with the goal of curing, we are including also this population.
Okay, so you'll get that results in the new trial.
We will get these results in the near future.
Super. All right, well, thank you very much. I'm going to turn it over to the rest of the panel, and to the Jack, you're up.
Thank you, and thanks, Dr. San Miguel, for being on this call. Just to kind of follow up on Gary's last question, are there other possible treatment modalities for high-risk smoldering myeloma, such as treatment based on genetic mutation or the so-called attacking the myeloma stem cell, things like that, or will we pretty much be confined, not confined, but looking at the treatments like your trial is looking at, because there's not enough of those mutations or ability to find stems.
Okay. I think targeted therapy will have a clear place in the myeloma treatment, but not as a single treatment modality. And the reason why I say this is because myeloma is different from other hematological malignancies or other cancer in the way that it's not a monogenic disease. In myeloma, usually there are complex genetic abnormalities. And for this reason, to use only a target therapy probably will not work. You will need to combine also other drugs.
So we wouldn't expect, for example, the MATCH trial that NCI is doing to work for myeloma patients, because it's really only looking at a single genetic mutation?
This is my personal view.
Yeah.
That we should use the new target therapies, but in combination.
Okay. And then at IMWG...
I mean, you should not forget that myeloma has a complexity in the clones. Okay?
Yes, thank you. I was fortunate enough to attend the recent IMWG meeting where you said the definition of a curative treatment is that one-third of patients remain myeloma-free for 10-plus years. First, I wanted to clarify, does that include with or without maintenance? And then I have a follow-up question.
Okay. For me... the definition of a curative treatment, you are right, will be that approximately one-third of the patients remain disease-free for 10 years. And this should be either with or without maintenance. For me, it's not a problem, but to be disease-free for 10 years will be probably that the patient is cured. But we are changing a bit the way to think about that, because if I have a patient that is minimal residual disease negative for continuous 5 years, probably this patient may be cured as well.
Whether or not they are still on maintenance treatment, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And just to follow up, I know you're a football fan. Which we call soccer in the U.S.
Definitely.
So I'm wondering if you kind of take the analogy of football match being 90 minutes, how many minutes to play before we find a curative treatment for some faction of myeloma or smoldering myeloma patients?
I would love it to say that we only need 5 minutes to find a curative treatment, but unfortunately I think this is not the right answer, and it's very difficult to guess, but I would not think that we need 80 minutes of the match, even neither 50 minutes. Let's think about 30 or 40 minutes.
So maybe somewhere a little bit beyond halftime.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is my dream, at least.
Thank you so much. I'll turn it back over to Gary.
Okay.
Yes. If you, I think Cindy hasn't been able to call in. Cindy, are you online?
Yes. If you,
No, Gary, I don't
okay.
think Cindy
all right.
is online
okay.
with us.
Hey, Jack, if you
could read out her question.
Yes, Jack, could you please ask Yelich's question?
I can, Gary, but the way the questions go, I think it would actually be better if you asked Cindy's questions first, even though
okay.
I know it.
Will do.
Just sequencing.
Okay, all right. Yeah, well, it was. We just found that out, apparently, as she was unfortunately detained. All right, let me ask Cindy's questions. Dr. San Miguel, high-risk smoldering multiple myeloma is currently being defined as likely to progress to active myeloma in 2 to 3 years by a defined set of criteria. I have read about 2 sets of criteria, the Mayo model and the Spanish PETHEMA model. Can you briefly explain these models and are they other ways to define high-risk smoldering multiple myeloma? Is there a current agreed-upon definition of high-risk smoldering multiple myeloma? Are researchers investigating the possibility of treating smoldering multiple myeloma patients that have high-risk genetic features as defined by gene expression profiling or some other molecular profiling test, even if they don't fit into the current definition of high-risk smoldering multiple myeloma? And I think she snuck about 8 questions into one, but
okay.
We'll try to tackle that.
Let me try to summarize the answer. First of all, is what are the major model? The major model for high risk are those patients that have more than 30 grams per liter of monoclonal component of paraprotein plus more than 10% plasma cells in the bone marrow. The Spanish criteria, independently of the proportion of plasma cell and independently of the amount of paraprotein, include as a criteria, they should have either more than 30, the Spanish criteria is either more than 30 or more than 10% plasma cell. And in addition to one of these two criteria, all the plasma cells should be clonal. And the patient should have immunoparesis. Okay? There are other criteria to predict also high risk, such as an evolving pattern of evolution. This means that the end component is increasing in month after month, or the presence of high risk cytogenetics, or the presence of a high risk gene expression profiling. These are new criteria that also predict for high risk of progression. The next question are, will we agree upon definition of high risk? You don't need to have one single classification for high risk. And in fact, if you have several different criteria, as the ones that I am mentioning, this means that they are independent criteria, and all of them qualify for high risk. It's the same in active myeloma. If you have high risk cytogenetics, you have, in the active myeloma, already poor prognosis. But if you have extramedullary disease, it's also poor prognosis. If you have stage 3 plus elevated LDH, it's poor prognosis. I mean, these are independent factors, and all of them qualify for poor prognosis in the context of active myeloma. The same occurs with the smoldering. There are several different factors that help to identify the high risk. And this is not a bad, it is a good news just to have the different opportunities to identify this patient and not only a single marker. In other words, you have several biomarkers that can contribute, can help you. And the final question was whether or not there are clinical trials that will investigate the value of early intervention according to gene expression profiling or other molecular profiling. By sure, they are going to be clinical trials in this context.
Okay, thank you so much, Doctor. How did you select the treatment protocol in the CESAR trial?
Okay, the treatment protocol was designed in the CESAR trial with a goal to try to cure half of the a high-risk small dream patient. And for this reason, we decided at that time, it was almost 2 years ago, to combine the most active drugs. One proteasome inhibitor in this moment was we considered that carfilzomib would be probably the most active one. One IMiD, lenalidomide, and plus dexamethasone, plus the autologous transplant, and also consolidation and then maintenance. Our goal was just to try to combine the most active drugs available at that time. At that time, monoclonal antibodies were not available.
Okay. All right, yeah. So high-dose therapy followed by autologous stem cell transplantation, okay. So they'll also be getting melphalan during this CESAR trial, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in fact, we decided, okay, what is the optimal treatment in active myeloma? In patients that have Krebs symptoms, and it was a triple combination that of a proteasome inhibitor, IMiD, and we choose six cycles of carfilzomib, lenalidomide, and low-dose dexamethasone with a stem cell collection after the third cycle, and then to move after the completion of the six cycles into high-dose melphalan, then the consolidation with another two cycles of KRD, carfilzomib, lenalidomide, dex. This consolidation was given 3 months. Is given 3 months after the transplant, and then 2 years maintenance with lendex.
Okay. So the last one is besides CESAR and ASCENT trials. What are there any others? Things that are on the horizon for high-risk smoldering multiple myeloma?
Yeah, there are several other trials with different drug combinations that are being tested, also with either lenalidomide alone, also with carfilzomib, lenalidomide, and dex without autologous transplant, also with elotuzumab, in smoldering patients, and also with monoclonal antibodies as a single agent.
Okay, fantastic. Jack, would you like to go over Jelic's questions now?
Sure. I know, Dr. Samigel, that you know Jelic Baru, and he's very sad that he couldn't make the call. Last night he got a call away to a different project, so he asked me to ask his questions of you. Before I get to that, can you explain in the CESAR trial when MRD testing is done?
Okay. At the CESAR trial, the MRD is investigated after induction, after autologous transplant, after consolidation, and during maintenance once a year.
Great. And that's all via the flow cytometry method?
We are doing both flow cytometry, next generation flow, and next generation sequencing, both.
That's fantastic. So ELAC first asked the following: as we eagerly anticipate the start of the ASCENT trial in the U.S., can you tell us how the CESAR trial is going in Spain and Europe, and how it's different or how it's similar to the ASCENT trial in the U.S.?
Okay, the CESAR trial is going pretty well. We have enrolled over 30 patients already, and the difference between the CESAR and the ASCENT trial is mainly that the ASCENT trial include daratumumab as part of induction and consolidation, and also as part of the maintenance. Then a monoclonal antibody is included. This is the major difference. The second difference is that not all patients will receive autologous transplant. Only the candidates are going to receive or ones that will to receive a consolidation with autologous. This is the two major differences.
Are you expecting to, or maybe the question is, when are you expecting to be able to announce some results from the CESAR trial?
Okay, not before 2 years.
So
preliminary results.
Yeah, so 2018 probably. Okay. And then Yilak asked, using either or both of these CURE trials, you may be able to achieve sustained MRD in some percentage of patients, and that's a big deal and could potentially be a paradigm shifting for them. Can you talk about potentially curing subsets of high-risk smoldering myeloma patients and how it can lead to potentially better treatment and outcomes for those who already have myeloma?
Okay. I think our goal, at least in the Spanish trial, was to achieve cure. In other words, to maintain an MRD negative status in half of the patients. This is our goal. It's an ambitious goal, but probably if we are able to achieve this, this will mean that we are able to cure a substantial proportion of patients by the early intervention.
Okay. And his final question is a question of all myeloma patients want to know about, and that is, how is the development of blood-based MRD testing going? And you see it supplementing bone marrow biopsy-based testing in the next, let's say, 1 to 2 years?
Okay. I don't think MRD in peripheral blood will be an easy task. I don't think it will be an easy task. And the reason is because the myeloma disease is mainly focusing in the bone marrow. Blood tests we're going to have a lot of value for investigation and diagnosis when you have bulky disease, but at the time of minimal residual disease, you need to go to the source of the disease, that is the bone marrow. Then, although it's a bit painful, at the same time, is the best reservoir for the malignant cells, and I think you need to focus on the bone marrow. This is my personal feeling.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
We are working. We are working on the peripheral blood, but I'm not sure that it's going to be the best. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Gary. Those are Yilak's questions.
Okay. Fantastic. Priya, could you see if there's any callers online that would like to ask Dr. San Miguel some questions?
Yes, Gary. I think we have Dana online. Dana.
Yes. Hi, Priya. Hi, Gary. Yes.
Hi.
Thank you so very much.
Hi, Dana.
Good afternoon, Dr. San Miguel. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to help smoldering patients understand what is going on in our world. Appreciate it so much. I'm listening closely, and I'm detecting that it makes, apparently, early intervention makes the most sense before mutational changes take place. Am I right with hearing that from you?
Okay. Unfortunately, mutational changes are already present frequently at the time of a smoldering disease. But my personal position is that this mutation will accumulate with time, and for this reason, I think it's a clear rationale for early intervention, to avoid accumulation of mutations.
Okay. So with that in mind, as a smoldering patient, how would I go about, or would my specialists go about, to detect and identify whether any advanced mutational changes, which make it more challenging or less likely to potentially cure the disease? In other words, how do I know that I've been evaluated early enough in the disease to benefit from either your CESAR trial or the ASCENT trial?
We are doing even in the CESAR trial, and I suppose in the ASCEND they are doing the same, we are doing a lot of genomic analysis, and probably the answer to your question will come later on when we do this analysis and we prospectively evaluate the impact of the different mutational pattern in the outcome of the patients.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's one of the answers or one of the questions that you're looking to answer.
Yeah.
And did you also state, Dr. Samigel, that if we see 5 years of MRD negativity, that potentially could be considered a cure for a subset of patients?
Yeah.
The five-year mark.
I think if you are MRD negative for 5 consecutive years, the chances to be cured are very high. This will be probably a better predictor of outcome than 10 years of conventional CR that was in the past what we consider as potentially cured.
Okay, so the CESAR trial doesn't have the daratumumab arm to it, but it does obviously
have
the...
No, when we designed it, daratumumab was not available.
Right, but it has the KRD part of it. And and I'm thinking of Dr. Landgren's NIH trial where he just did the KRD without stem cell transplants. And it was a small group of patients. But some of them actually are maintaining their MRD negative status for about 3 years now. And they've done it without stem cell transplant. So I guess my question is, what benefit do you see the stem cell transplant bringing to that KRD treatment protocol?
Let me tell you another question.
Uh-huh.
With the Lendex, without carfilzomib, we have also patients that maintain a continuous complete remission now for 5 years, okay, without the carfilzomib. Then the question is, do we need carfilzomib? No. My answer is yes. We need carfilzomib because we will increase the proportion of patients that are going to be MRD negative by sure. And this is the reason why you also implemented the autologous transplant, just to increase, to give more chances to the patients to achieve an MRD negative status.
Oh, I see.
I know that some patients may not need, but we are increasing the chances to many patients, and this is similar to what occurred in the past with acute lymphoblastic, the childhood acute lymphoblastic leukemia. The initial combinations treatment were probably a bit aggressive in the way that we used too many drugs. But we were able to demonstrate that we had the capacity to cure childhood acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And from the platform of curing, we start to identify those patients that probably do not need so much treatment. But first, you need to establish the platform of curing.
I understand that. Thank you. And Dr. Samigel, why carfilzomib versus Velcade? Does it have anything to do with carfilzomib is an irreversible proteasome inhibitor? And I'm not even sure what means.
No, really. The reason why we choose carfilzomib is because there is a trial, the Endeavor trial, in which carfilzomib dex has been compared with bortezomib dex in relapsing patients, and the responses and the duration of the responses was longer with carfilzomib. For this reason, we decided to choose what was apparently the most effective proteasome inhibitor, at least from that trial.
Okay. Are there any concerns about cardiotoxicity using it? How will the cardiac effects be monitored during your trial?
Okay. We do a careful control for cardiac toxicity, but the proportion of patients that have cardiac problem in the relapse setting and the upfront setting, I'm talking now about the last clinical trial on the ASPIRE, Endeavor, the FOCUS trial with carfilzomib, the proportion is around 3%, 5%, no more than that.
Oh, okay. So it's very small. So there really is not as a big concern about that. So a smoldering patient, not knowing which way to turn. Do I do such an aggressive trial? Do I stand back and wait for something, perhaps to see if the daratumumab trials are going to be, you know, the key to the cure? What guidance would you give to a smoldering patient coming into your office for the first time?
Okay, when I have a patient with a smoldering, first of all, I try to identify the risk factors. If it's a low intermediate risk, I say, look, you have low chances to progress into active myeloma, then I will delay treatment because the science can evolve rapidly. And before you develop an active myeloma, probably we may have the most adequate treatment for you in case you need it. Then wait, because you don't need it. You have low risk. If you have high risk, you have at least 50% chances to progress into active myeloma in 2 years, and we have already one clinical trial showing a significant benefit in overall survival, a clear benefit, and we have updated information, the data that will be published very soon in Lancet Oncology, in which we demonstrate that there is a clear overall survival benefit. Then if there is an active, and if there is a clinical trial in your country, in your institution, I will seriously consider, yes, to have early treatment. And if I would say in a smoldering patient, I would go for treatment.
Dr. San Miguel, thank you so very much for taking all of my questions. Appreciate it very much. And I appreciate even more so what you're doing for the smoldering myeloma patient population to try to find us some answers. Because we live in that awful gray wait and watch and worry area. So thank you for that.
And thank you, Dana, for some excellent questions. Doctor, one thing that you had mentioned earlier, and I just wanted to make sure that I got that clear, is I asked for about high-risk genetic features, and you mentioned that most of the smoldering patients, whether they're high-risk or low-risk, haven't developed those features as yet. Am I right? That's correct.
And even in the MGAS patients, most of the genetic features that we have identified in the in multiple myeloma are already present in MGAS patients, but probably they are present in a very small subclone without the capacity to progress because it's well controlled by the immune system. Then our personal feeling is that the genetics, the genetic difference between MGAS or smoldering and multiple myeloma is not only that a new genetic abnormality is emerging, that probably this is the case, but also that it's an accumulation or a proliferative advantage of one of the clones that is already present from the beginning.
Okay. Yeah, I get. So if you looked at MGUS or smoldering, cells, you wouldn't find 414 or,
There are patients with 414, with MGUS with 414 that has not progressed for years and years. Then genetic is not only the explanation. It's not the only explanation. You need more explanation for the progression.
Okay.
I think the immune system is critical.
It sounds like, you can kind of nip it in the bud type of thing if you get it early. And that's really what is so strong about this whole process that you're going through. And the next feature that we have on this program is now that we know we can have an impact, how do you find it? And so we'll be talking about the iStop-MM program, and wonder what your thoughts were about that program.
I think it's a very attractive program, and it deserves a lot of research and investment on that. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think so as well, and And again, thank you so much, Dr. San Miguel. It's obvious that...
It has been a pleasure.
From talking to you, that you are just one remarkable... remarkable individual and leading the whole thing forward. So, Priya, want to close it up?
Yep. Thank you, Gary. Yes. Hey, it's almost time, and I guess doctor wants to, wrap this up quickly. Thank you, Professor Miguel, for your time. This, I think, was a very brilliant talk.
Thank you very much
for sharing all this information. Gary and Jack, thanks so much for your participation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Transcript will be available on CureTalk's website. In the third session on high-risk smoldering myeloma, we are talking to Dr. Christensen on iStop MM treatment on September 14th. So please visit us, curetalks.com, for more details on upcoming shows. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
As always.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Doctor. Bye-bye.